Chapter 5, Trials in West Africa. There seems an important instruction in these words of our dear Lord, "Mine hour is not yet come." The two following years of which I am now to give some account will seem as an absolute blank in a very short life. But as the Lord's hour of grace was not yet come, I was to have still deeper experience of the dreadful state of the heart of man when left to itself. I have seen frequent cause since to admire the mercy of the Lord in banishing me to those distant parts and almost excluding me from human society at a time when I was big with mischief and like one infected with a pestilence, was capable of spreading a taint wherever I went. Had my affairs taken a different turn, had I succeeded in my designs and remained in England, my sad story would probably have been worse. Worse in myself, indeed, I could hardly have been, but my wickedness would have had greater scope. I might have been very hurtful to others and multiplied irreparable evils. But the Lord wisely placed me where I could do others little harm. The few I had to converse with were too much like myself, and I was soon brought into such abject circumstances that I was too low to have any influence. I was rather shunned and despised than imitated, there being few even of the Negroes themselves during the first year of my residence among them, but thought themselves too good to speak to me. I was as yet an outcast lying in my blood. Ezekiel 16 verse 6, and to all appearance exposed to perish. But the Lord beheld me with mercy. He did not strike me to hell, as I justly deserved. He passed by me when I was in my blood, and said unto me, "Live." The appointed time for the manifestation of his love, to cover all my iniquities with the robe of his righteousness, and to admit me to the privileges of his children, was not till long afterward, yet he bade me live. I can only ascribe it to his secret upholding power, and that what I suffered in a part of this interval did not bereave me either of my life or senses. Yet since by these sufferings the force of my evil example and inclination was lessened, I have reason to account them amongst my mercies. It may not be amiss to give you a very brief sketch of the geography of the circuit I was now confined to. I may have frequent occasion to refer to places that I shall now mention, for my trade afterward, when the Lord gave me to see better days, was chiefly to the same places and with the same persons where and by whom I had been considered on a level with their meanest slaves. From Cape de Verde, the most western point of Africa, to Cape Mount, the whole coast is full of rivers. The principal are Gambia, Rio Grande, Sierra Leone, and Cherbro. Of the former, as it is well known, and as I was never there, I need say nothing. The Rio Grande, like the Nile, divides into many branches near the sea. On the most northerly, called Quechio, the Portuguese have a settlement. The most southern branch, known by the name of Rio Nuna, is, or then was, the usual boundary of the white men's trade northward. Sierra Leone is a mountainous peninsula, uninhabited and inaccessible on account of the thick woods, excepting those parts which lie near the water. The river is large and navigable. About 12 leagues to the southeast are three contiguous islands called the Benenos, about 20 miles in circuit. This was about the center of the white men's residence. 7 leagues further, the same way, lie the plantains, 3 small islands, 2 miles distant from the continent, at the point which forms one side of the Cherbro. This river is more properly a sound, running within a long island, and receiving the confluences of several large rivers, rivers unknown to song, but far more deeply engraven in my remembrance than the Po or Tiber. The southernmost of these has a very peculiar course, almost parallel to the coast. It will seldom lead one above 3 miles, and sometimes not more than 1/2 mile from the seashore. Indeed, I know not but that all these rivers may have communications with each other and with the sea in many places. If you cast your eyes upon a large map of Africa, you will have a general idea of the country I was in. Most of the places I have mentioned are in the same order as I have named them. Aside, the geographical description is inserted as Newton wrote it, but the reader will bear in mind the changes that have occurred during a long interval of time. My new master had formerly resided near Cape Mount, but now he settled at the Plantains, upon the largest of the 3 islands. It is a low, sandy island, about 2 miles in circumference, and almost covered with palm trees. We immediately began to build a house and to enter upon trade. I had now some desire to retrieve my lost time and to exert diligence in what was before me. He was a man with whom I might have lived tolerably well if he had not been soon influenced against me. He was much under the direction of a black woman who lived with him as a wife. She was a person of some consequence in her own country, and he owed his first rise to her interest. The woman, I know not for what reason, was strangely prejudiced against me from the first. What made it still worse for me was a severe illness which attacked me very soon, before I had opportunity to show what I could or would do in his service. Treated with scorn and contempt, I was sick when he sailed in a shallop to Rio Nuna, and he left me in the woman's hands. At first I was taken some care of, but as I did not recover very soon, she grew weary and entirely neglected me. I had sometimes not a little difficulty to procure a draught of cold water when burning with a fever. My bed was a mat spread upon a board or chest, and a log of wood my pillow. When my fever left me and my appetite returned, I would gladly have eaten, but no one gave me. She lived in plenty herself, but hardly allowed me sufficient to sustain life. Now and then, when in the highest good humor, she would send me victuals in her own plate after she had dined. So greatly was my pride humbled, I received this with thanks and eagerness, as the most needy beggar does an alms. Once, I well remember, I was called to receive this bounty from her own hand, but being exceedingly weak and feeble, I dropped the plate. Those who live in plenty can hardly conceive how this loss touched me, but she had the cruelty to laugh at my disappointment. Though the table was covered with dishes, she lived much in the European manner, she refused to give me any more. My distress has been at times so great as to compel me to go by night and pull up roots in the plantation at the risk of being punished as a thief. These I have eaten raw upon the spot, for fear of discovery. The roots I speak of are very wholesome food, when boiled or roasted, but as unfit to be eaten raw in any quantity as a potato. I have sometimes been relieved by strangers, even by slaves in the chain, who have secretly brought me victuals, for they dared not be seen from their own slender pittance. Next to pressing want, nothing sits harder upon the mind than scorn and contempt. Of this I had an abundant measure. When I was very slowly recovering, this woman would sometimes pay me a visit, not to pity or relieve, but to insult me. She would call me worthless and indolent, and compel me to walk, which I could hardly do. She would then send her attendants to mimic my motion, to clap their hands, laugh, and throw limes at me. If they chose to throw stones, as was the case once or twice, they were not rebuked, though all who depended on her favor must join in her treatment. Yet, when she was out of sight, I was rather pitied than scorned by the meanest of her slaves. Accused of dishonesty, at length my master returned from his voyage. I complained of ill usage, but he could not believe me, and as I did it in her hearing, I fared no better for it. But in his second voyage he took me with him. We did pretty well for a while, till a brother trader he met in the river persuaded him that I was unfaithful, and that I stole his goods in the night, or when he was on shore. This was almost the only vice I could not be justly charged with. The only remains of a good education I could boast of was what is commonly called honesty. As far as he had entrusted me, I had been always faithful. Though my great distress might in some measure have excused it, I never once thought of defrauding him in the smallest matter. However, the charge was believed, and I was condemned without evidence. Hunger and exposure. From that time he likewise used me very hardly. Whenever he left the vessel, I was locked upon deck, with a pint of rice for my day's allowance, and if he stayed longer, I had no relief till his return. Indeed, I believe I should have been nearly starved but for an opportunity of catching fish sometimes. When fowls were killed for his own use, I seldom was allowed any part but the entrails to bait my hooks with. At what we call slack water, that is, about the changing of the tides, when the current was still, I used generally to fish, for at other times it was not practicable, and I very often succeeded. If I saw a fish upon my hook, my joy was little less than any other person may have found in the accomplishment of the scheme he had most at heart. Such a fish, hastily broiled or rather half-burned, without sauce, salt, or bread, has afforded me a delicious meal. If I caught none, I might, if I could, sleep away my hunger till the return of slack water and then try again. Nor did I suffer less from the inclemency of the weather and the want of clothes. The rainy season was now advancing. My clothing was a shirt, a pair of trousers, a cotton handkerchief instead of a cap, and a cotton cloth about 2 yards long for upper garments. Thus accoutred, I have been exposed for 20, 30, perhaps nearly 40 hours together in incessant rains, accompanied with strong gales of wind, without the least shelter when my master was on shore. I feel some faint returns of the violent pains I then contracted, the excessive cold and wet I endured in that voyage, and so soon after I had recovered from a long sickness, quite broke my constitution and my spirits. The latter were soon restored, but the effects of the former still remain with me as a needful memento of the service and the wages of sin. In about 2 months we returned. The rest of the time I remained with him was chiefly spent at the plantains, under the same regimen as I have already mentioned. My haughty heart was now brought down, not to a wholesome repentance, nor to the language of the prodigal. This was far from me, but my spirits were sunk, and I lost all resolution and almost all reflection. I had lost the fierceness which fired me on board the Harwich, and which made me capable of the most desperate attempts. But I was no further changed than a tiger tamed by hunger. Remove the occasion, and he will be as wild as ever. One thing, though strange, is true. Though destitute of food and clothing, depressed to a degree beyond common wretchedness, I could sometimes collect my mind to mathematical studies. I had bought Barrow's Euclid at Plymouth. It was the only volume I brought on shore. It was always with me, and I used to take it to my remote corners of the island by the seaside and draw my diagrams with a long stick upon the sand. Thus I often beguiled my sorrows and almost forgot my feeling. Without any other assistance, I made myself in a good measure master of the first 6 books of Euclid.